Hello everyone, my name is Robert Hantock. I'm a trustee of City Disabilities, a registered charity that helps disabled professionals and their employers. I was a partner at one City law firm or another for 30 years or so. For most of my career, I've been profoundly deaf, and for all of it, I've had mild to moderate dyslexia. I'm going to make some suggestions about how to treat disabled clients and colleagues in the legal profession. But a lot of what I say will be relevant to other minority groups and other professions. The suggestions are based not just on my own experience, but the experience of many disabled people that I've met. The first thing to appreciate about disability prejudice is that whilst people are rightly fighting racial, gender and LGBT prejudice, in many ways, disability is a long way behind. Let me illustrate what I mean. Supposing I said, I know what it's like to be black, I'm disabled, or I know what it's like to be a woman, I have dyslexia. Many people would say, well, hang on, there's nothing wrong with being black or female. The thing is that disabled people don't think there's anything wrong with them being disabled. They don't regard themselves as defective any more than, for example, black people do for being black. So what's the problem? Well, a lot of black people or women say the problem they face is other people's attitude towards them. That's exactly what disabled people say too. So let's talk about that, about people's attitude to disabled colleagues. Here are some suggested rules that I've developed about how to treat colleagues with disabilities. Rule one is, please treat disability as a practical matter. It's nothing more. If someone who's disabled might need help, offer it to them in the same way as you would to anyone else. Imagine you see someone carrying something that's heavy. Imagine you see someone trying to put something on a shelf that they can't reach. It's no different. If you're not sure what to say, short and simple offers are best. Need a hand is a good one. And if they say, no thanks, just leave them to it. Don't persist, you've done all you should. Suppose someone tells you they have a disability and you aren't sure what help to offer. Just ask. Again, if you're shy, keep it short. Just asking, what helps, is as good a way to do it as any. So don't worry about not knowing the limits of someone's disability. Don't stress, for example, about not knowing whether someone with a mobility disability can shake hands. Let's take a quick reality check. You wouldn't be embarrassed about not knowing whether someone's tall enough to reach something on a shelf. Disability is just another feature. It's no different. But at the end of the day, if your offer of help sounded awkward, don't worry. Disabled people are so used to seeing that, they hardly register it. But whatever happens, please follow the all-important Rule 7, which I will come to. I've said that disability should be treated as a practical matter. That leads to rule two. You should never emotionalise disability. Don't feel sorry for disabled people. They don't want to be like you. They're just as likely to be happy with the hand that life has dealt them as you are with the hand that you've been given. True, if you ask me, for example, whether I'd like better hearing, the answer would be yes. But that would be along with being better organised, more patient, a better engineer, a better pilot, and a host of other things. I'm not sure hearing would come first. Now let's take something in contrast. Suppose you ask me whether I'd like never to have been deaf. Then I am sure of the answer. It's no. I prize my life experience just like you prize yours. There's nothing tragic about my being deaf. So let's stay clear of pity parties for disabled people. Again, let's take another quick reality check. Do you feel sorry for people for having a different colour skin? Let's stay on sympathy for a moment to make a distinction. Period pain and morning sickness are unpleasant. Childbirth, from what I've seen, really, really hurts. Men can sympathise with that. But should they feel sorry for people for being women? In the same way, I might miss a train because I don't hear an announcement. It's okay to sympathise about the episode, but don't feel sorry for someone for being disabled. If you call being sorry for disabled people a false negative, we should also deal with a false positive. Let's move on to something disabled people call inspiration pornography. It's common to see mawkish stories that suggest it's inspiring or brave for someone with a disability to want to live an ordinary life. It isn't. It's ordinary to want to live an ordinary life. Of course, disabled people can be brave or inspiring, so can non-disabled people. Often both are brave or inspiring for wanting to fight other people's prejudices, but never suggest that people with disabilities are brave or inspiring just for wanting to do the same things as non-disabled people do. As I've said, don't emotionalise it. If you shouldn't emotionalise disability, that leads to a further question. Is it okay to ask a disabled person about their disability or how they became disabled? Of course it is. As I've said, don't emotionalise it. There's nothing embarrassing about it, and there's nothing wrong with asking. But here comes the point. Providing you don't ask in a way that breaks the next rule. So on to my third rule. Disabilities don't define people. Imagine the head of your department declares a departmental meeting, "We have a black man joining us next week." That sounds gross, doesn't it? Unless it's relevant to the context, you shouldn't define colleagues by their skin colour or gender or sexual preference. So don't define them by whether they can stand up or hear quiet noises, for example. There's rather more to being a lawyer than that. So let's go back to my last rule. If you ask someone about their disability, don't do it in a way that shows you think it's the most important thing about them. Sometimes it comes up in a conversation, for example, if you're asking whether they need a hand. But if it doesn't, and it's still top of your list of curiosity points, then it's going to go down really badly. Let's take another quick reality check. Supposing you're introduced to a new colleague who's black, and the first question you ask him is, "Where did your family come from originally?" The reason it's so toe-curlingly inappropriate is because you've shown that you regard his skin colour as being his most important feature. Saying things like, "Is your husband disabled too?" or "You'll like this story, Robert, it's about someone who's deaf," usually suggest that you see someone's disability as their most important feature. And as I've said, disabilities don't define people. Rule four I call avoiding stereotypes and the Fiona Hill phenomenon. Who's Fiona Hill? Last year, Fiona Hill gave evidence before Congress about an argument she'd had with Gordon Sondland. It was all high-level politics. She'd been angry with Sondland because he hadn't been coordinating with her. In her evidence, Fiona Hill made a personal observation that was repeated around the world the next day. She said that when women show anger, it's often attributed to them having emotional issues. What bothered her was people using the stereotype of the emotional woman to dismiss her reaction. Why am I telling you this? Well, disabled people get that too. Don't use stereotypes to discount a disabled person's reaction. Suppose a disabled person is frustrated because you've excluded them from a discussion or because they don't have the facilities they need at work. Don't just shrug it off as them getting frustrated because they're disabled. They're frustrated because you've been rude or because they can't do their jobs. Years back, a well-known journalist talked to me about my career. He ended our meetings by saying, "At first I thought you must be doing cross-examination to prove something because you're deaf, but now it seems to be just part of your job." What had he got wrong? He'd been far too quick to assume that because I was disabled, I would feel that I had some point to prove. Not everything people decide or do is about their race, gender, or sexual preference, nor is it about their disability if they have one. Stereotyping is a hallmark of unsophisticated thinking. Rule 5 is something we've actually seen great progress on over the last 20 years or so. So you really do risk being the odd one out if you break it. Here's Rule 5. Please don't overreact to disabilities. Be particularly cautious about people who warn others in advance about someone being disabled. Let's take another quick reality check. Would you warn someone in advance that a colleague is black or gay? And what would it say about you if you did? Again, let me give you an illustration. I lecture on topics relating to law and management. Usually I bring someone with me to sit in the front row and type out any questions on a laptop. When someone asks a question, I glance down, read what's been typed and answer it. I rarely bother to say I'm deaf. Most people don't even notice I'm doing it. It's no big deal. I've lectured for over 30 years in 20 different countries and jurisdictions, and nobody's made an issue of it. Until a couple of years back, when for the first time, someone did. I was asked to give a lecture at a law firm. They became fixated on the fact that I'm deaf. First, they wanted to put an explicit notice on the lecture invitation. I was surprised and a bit irritated, and I said I would deal with it. But then I was told I should make the announcement that I was deaf at the outset of the lecture. After that, it was raised for a third time. I was contacted by someone from the firm who wanted to check whether I would announce I was deaf or they would. Now, by that time, I was feeling pretty cross, particularly since I've given the talk for free. So whatever you do, if there isn't a practical problem, don't conjure one up out of your own overreaction. If you do find yourself overreacting to someone's disability, race, gender, or sexual preference, just quietly take your time, think it through, and it seems ordinary soon enough. Rule 6 is just common sense. Disabled people have acquired very great experience in how to deal with their disabilities. They also know how other people will react to them, including some people being uncertain as to the right thing to do. So Rule 6 is this: don't patronise them with advice on how to deal with their disabilities, and don't try to decide the help they need for them. Whatever you do, don't try to introduce the fact they're disabled to other people for them, unless for some reason they volunteered that they would like you to do that. Take a reality check. Who's got more experience of introducing their disabilities? If you are tempted to, what's making you think you're going to be better at introducing disabilities than a disabled person? What assumption is prompting you to think that? That leads to the all-important Rule 7. Let me say something that will sound more extreme than it is. Intention rarely matters with prejudice. Again, let's take another of my quick reality checks. Men who touch their female colleagues inappropriately often say they don't mean to offend, but they do offend. They just can't be bothered to think about why. What is offensive is their assumption as to what they were entitled to do. Many people who display prejudice claim that it's an answer, that they didn't mean to offend. It's not. Prejudice is about assumptions, not intentions. Supposing you're female and a male colleague patronises you with a bit of mansplaining. If you then challenge him, he's not going to clear things up by saying he was only trying to support you or only trying to help you. Even if he thinks he was, if some derogatory assumption lies behind his suggestion that you need support or help, he's repeating and confirming what was offensive. So it is with disabilities. Don't assume that because someone has a disability, they can't do anything at all. Yes, that's a thing. Just like a belief in racial inferiority or the view that women are the weaker sex. Again, let's take a reality check. You wouldn't simplify something for someone because they're black or gay, so don't speak slowly to someone with dyslexia or who has a visual disability. And just as I've said, don't introduce someone's disability for them unless they've asked you to. Just give a bit of thought as to what help the person will actually need. Of course, sometimes it isn't clear whether someone needs help. What's more, it's often considerate to assume that a deaf person might not have heard, or that a visually disabled person might not have seen, or that some with a mobility disability may not be able to reach. If, having thought about it, you don't know whether they need help or not, ask them, "Need a hand?" or "I'm not sure whether you can hear or see or reach this." But think about it first. If you're using some silly stereotype to assume that their disability makes them generally incapable, it's just as offensive as mansplaining. So those are my suggested rules. What happens if they're broken? What happens if someone's challenged you and they were right to? Well, at the end of the day, we all get stuff wrong. All of us. Think about the complaint, and if you have got it wrong, apologise sincerely for it. Keep your dignity. Don't say, "I'm sorry if you were upset," if you know someone was upset. Don't say, "I was only trying to help," if you've actually been insulting. Give a simple, thoughtful, honest apology. Extreme behaviour aside, you are perfectly entitled to have that apology accepted. Then move on. As I've said, we all get stuff wrong. Thank you all very much for listening.